Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The FAA suspends an air traffic controller who fails to help land a couple of planes. Three people are killed when a van and a train collide, and it may soon be illegal to throw cigarette butts on the ground.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves, to whatever degree possible, for Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, March 24th, 2011. A freight train struck a shuttle van, killing three people near Kelso yesterday. The force of the train knocked the van into a ditch. Gus Malonis with the Burlington Northern Santa Fe said that the train crew shuttle was struck by a grain train from Minnesota at a private crossing in Longview. Two crew members out of Seattle and the driver were killed. A third crew member was in critical condition. The vehicle had left a rail yard and had been crossing the tracks west to east near the Harry Morgan Bridge.
I'm glad you told me right up front that three people were dead. Otherwise, I was going to do a whole Danny Kaye grain train flag and dragon thing.
I heard this on the news this morning and had my usual response of like thinking, okay, well, it was, you know, an unmarked, crossing. You know, there aren't the dinghy lights and the...
It's only marked by the huge train coming down the tracks.
Well, yeah, and my reaction is always like, and so you didn't look either way just to see if there was a train coming anyway. It's kind of hard to miss a train. What makes this worse is that these people work for the train company. They were actually employees of the train company on a shuttle van.
Well, maybe it's like working in a chocolate factory. After a while, you just lose your taste for it. You don't really notice it.
Yeah, it's like, train. Oh, wait, train!
It seems like, really, all things being equal, not to trample on the graves of the recent dead, It seems like if you need a sign to point out that there's a 100-ton piece of metal coming at you at 50 miles an hour, you know, maybe you're in the wrong field.
Yeah,
I'm just saying it's maybe you're not really winning any gold medals for observance.
Yeah, there are a lot of stupid people who think that they can beat the train in their car.
There should totally be a game show called Beat the Train.
They do that with the MAX trains a lot. How fast can it be going? But people who actually work for the train company ought to more than anyone be aware of, you know, their size and speed and heaviness.
I would totally watch a show called Beat the Train.
beat the train.
Here's the thing, because nobody would ever beat the train. I mean, it would be like one of those Walter Castle films where they never filmed the, where they never made the second ending, where the where the guy gets away with it. They only filmed the one ending because that's the one the audience always votes for. It beat the train, and it's just an endless, an endless program of guys trying to win $100,000. It's dangled, like on a railroad track at which an Amtrak is plunging at like 500 miles an hour or something.
And the big season ender is that you tease and you tell everyone that one guy actually did beat the train, but what he didn't realize is, like, right on the other side of the tracks, a cliff. It'd be like a Wile E. Coyote kind of a thing.
Somebody notes that perhaps they're like squirrels that have lost their fear of humans ill-advisedly. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news, also science on the march. If you want to get this program via iTunes, you can do that. It's available there. Also, as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. And you can get it on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Portland resident Larry Fornchell, 68, is accused of trying to run over an off-duty police officer. He faced a judge yesterday. Tuesday morning, veteran police officer Sergeant Joe Santos was riding his bike to work. Detectives say that Fornchell, who was driving a silver Honda CRV, almost ran him off the road heading eastbound on Northwest Cornell, and then tried to cut off Sergeant Santos on his bicycle at the intersection of Northwest Lovejoy and 25th. Santos let the driver know he was there with the traditional bicyclist method of slapping the car with his hand.
Wait a minute. Did he know the guy was a cop, or was he just
being a
jackass and he chose poorly?
Yes, exactly.
Well done.
And then, of course, the guy being on a bike, he did the thing that bike guys do, where he slapped the car with his hand, which apparently just infuriated this guy for Fornchell.
Yeah, but when you say it's a thing that bike guys do, it's one thing if you're unprovoked, but if there's some jackass in a car who is actually menacing you.
And there's not a lot you can do otherwise.
Yeah, so, that guy. So.
But yes, he
sounds like he's going to get a lot more than his car slapped, by the way. He's going to get his anus slapped, I think, probably in some sort of a hooscow.
Slapped
with pain.
The angry 68-year-old man in the Honda, who was probably wearing a hat, by the way, because old men in hats, I believe, are our greatest traffic menace. Sergeant Fornchell, the guy on the bike, slapped the car door to let him know he was there. And then the Fornchell threw his car in reverse and tried to run the guy over.
Yeah.
Fornchell revved the engine, tried to run him down. And of course it turned out, he's an off-duty police officer. So, he's going to be charged with attempted assault in the second degree.
That's awesome.
And,
I wonder if as a cop, you just relish and cherish those moments because, there are a lot of difficult and dangerous jobs. And being a police officer is more dangerous than some, less dangerous than others. But also you do face your kind of menace and peril. There's a lot of stress that goes along with that. But one of the upsides, I would imagine, is that every now and again a guy F's with you, but he doesn't know you're a cop. And then there must just be the most glorious sort of slowly unfolding instant where you decide exactly how and when to take out your badge and show it to him you are about to experience the worst day of your life, jackhole.
When you get to just step out of your car and say, hey, jackass, and show him the badge. And then just watch the light in his eyes just slowly die.
There's this great episode of The West Wing where CJ and Josh and Charlie are all at a bar with Zoe Bartlett, with the president's daughter. And they have set up, earlier on in the episode, they've set up that she has the panic button she carries with her, and she presses the panic button on the keychain, and immediately, like, the Secret Service arrives. So they're at a bar, and Charlie goes up to the bar to get her a drink or something, and there's some group of idiot rednecks there that they don't really truck much with a black man and a white woman being seen together in public because they're unenlightened. And so they kind of circle around Charlie and they're just, kind of giving him what for and sort of pushing him around back and forth. And it's at one point Rob Lowe and Bradley Whitford go up to try to break up the fight. And the guy's still oblivious to the fact that they are kind of effing with the president's daughter, and the president's personal assistant just continue to pile on with, like, the racial nonsense. And at one point, Brad Whitford, who sees that Zoe is reaching for the panic button, just says, oh, this is too good to be true. and then it's immediately, it's like the doors bust open, and it's the guys come in with the Glocks, and it's just a whole lot of smackdown and beating. And it's so deeply satisfying. And if I was a cop,
I think I would almost just, I'm not saying that I would instigate or I would invite that sort of behavior or that I would go out of my way to provoke people, but I got to tell you, that really, a guy wouldn't have to cross me more than like, he wouldn't even have to cross me once. He'd have to, he would just have to cross me half of one time. I would bring to bear whatever force I was legally allowed to use.
This is one of those reasons why it's probably good that you're not a cop.
I would abuse my power instantly.
Oh, yeah, always.
Yeah.
The Federal Aviation Administration has suspended an air traffic controller after the controller failed to respond to two incoming planes at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport. The FAA is investigating the early morning incidents. While that's taking place, the traffic controller has been suspended from operational duties. The situation began at 12 a.m. on Wednesday when an American Airlines plane attempted to call the tower to get clearance to land and got no answer. The plane had been in contact with a regional air traffic control facility.
Did they just get like the Motorola generic, you know, da-da-da, we're sorry, we're not available to take your call at the moment. Please just circle endlessly while panicking.
I wonder if it just, you just get silence and you're not used to getting silence. Or you're going, just... hello, tower?
Bob, I...
Dude?
Anyone? Hey, John, can you call me on the other line? I don't think this is working.
Peter Knutson, a spokesman for the National Transportation Safety Board, said the plane had been in contact with a regional air traffic control facility, and a controller at that facility advised the pilot he, too, had been unable to contact anyone at the tower. 1012, the controller said, referring to the airline's flight number, called a couple of times on a landline and then tried to call in the commercial line, and there was no answer. The tower was apparently unmanned. Asked why by a pilot, the controller later responded, well, I'm going to take a guess and say the controller got locked out. I've heard of this happening before. Fortunately, it's not very often.
So there wasn't just, it wasn't like he just put up a sign that said back in 5 minutes or something and just, you know, he had to go relieve himself. Or, is this where they ended up having to call Gladys across the hall to go over and rap on the door to make sure that everything was okay?
Yeah, the old neighbor across the street who says, his car's in the driveway.
Denise?
I mean...
Are you here? Denise, your daughter called me. She was wondering if everything's fine.
So about 15 minutes later, United Airlines flight, which also failed to reach the tower, landed without any problems. Just went, well, I guess I'll just land. After that, the controller of the tower was back in communication. Former Director of FAA Accident Investigation Stephen Wallace says the incident really isn't a big deal.
There are probably between 1 and 200 airports in this country that are served by air carriers that do not have control towers. So there are procedures to do that, and they're done safely every day.
Okay, but this is not one of those... This is not one of those airports. This is served by a control tower. It's just the guy was off microwaving a burrito.
Yeah, this isn't like Bakersfield. This was the Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport.
This is the kind of story that I could just do without hearing. I just, really, all things being equal, if I had gone the rest of the day and didn't know that this had happened, that'd be just fine by me.
Yeah, the one flight, which was coming from Miami, had 91 passengers and 6 crew members aboard. The other flight arriving from Chicago had 63 passengers and 5 crew members. Both landed without any kind of problem. The Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood ordered the FAA to schedule 2 controllers on the overnight shift and said, it's not acceptable to have just one controller in the tower managing air traffic in this critical airspace. I've also asked FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt to study staffing levels at other airports around the country. Meanwhile, this fellow from Accident Investigation says the passengers were never in any danger.
90% of the airports in the country don't have control towers. Many airports have part-time control towers. So what the pilot did at the instruction of the radar controller, the prior controller he was talking to, was treated as an airport where the control tower had closed. The risk to the passengers here was very, very low.
Maybe it's some sort of instinctive just distrust of government officials or of authority figures. But the more they try to convince me in any given situation that I was never in any danger, the more I'm convinced that I was probably just moments away from some sort of fiery death and didn't know. I don't think I mentioned this to you, but I did a Twitter thing about this when I was flying to. So I had to, when I went to New York last week, I had to fly from here to Minneapolis. And then, by the way, the Minneapolis airport is awesome.
Really?
And that's not a thing. You really don't think about stuff in Minneapolis. Well, like, you don't think about stuff in Minneapolis, like, ever. But if someone does mention Minneapolis, because it's that Minneapolis-St. Paul thing, you don't really ever just think about it being just, a place that's really on the, you know, like, in the bleeding edge of technology or any sort of, you know, advancement. Remind me to get back to the Minneapolis airport here in just a bit. Maybe next hour. But there's something there we got to talk about. But But anyway, so I had the fly to Minneapolis, and then from Minneapolis to lovely Newark, New Jersey. But flying into Minneapolis, the pilot kept doing the weirdest thing. Like, I have no issue if they just say, like, it's going to get, you know, they'll do that, you know, it's going to get a little bit choppy. We got some rough air coming up, so if you just want to buckle yourselves in, and I'm going to get you through it as soon as possible. All right. You know, and it's, you know, and that's fine. I just, whatever. But the pilot on the way to Minneapolis kept doing this. I don't know if he was just trying to calm us or if it was just he didn't really hear the way the words were coming out of his mouth. It was some manifestation of a fear that he was not adequately able to conceal. But he kept whispering. Oh. He would whisper like we were heading into. He kept whispering when talking about. He'd be going. And so we're going to be heading into some turbulence. It's going to be coming up ahead. There's going to be some choppy air. And so things are going to get a little bit rough. And it was so deeply terrifying. It was.
It's like he didn't want his co-pilot to know.
It was, or just like, or he couldn't even say the words at a proper volume because then he was afraid that he would break down into sobs. Like if he said it too loudly that he himself would not be able to retain his composure. It was like he was just on the knife edge of mental collapse about the whole thing. That was, that.
So cold. So very cold.
So much I do differently. But, and then especially unnerving moment that happens every now and again on a flight where they actually just tell all of the flight crew and the stewardesses and whoever to buckle in themselves and to suspend drink service, quit bringing you the food and just to bolt everything, batten down the hatches.
Yeah, it might get a little bit choppy here, so we're going to ask the flight crew to buckle themselves in and no one move.
Yeah,
and put your head between your knees, just as a precaution.
Please contact the God of your understanding. But I take a perverse pleasure, by the way, at those moments. The more terrifying the flight becomes and the worse the turbulence is and the wind shear or the buckling or the, you know, the thumping around or whatever, I take a really perverse pleasure in feigning just the deepest, most peaceful sleep. Like I lean against the window and just go like... And just like, even if the plane is going like, I just kind of do a, and I just to annoy my seatmates.
I am never more zen than in those moments, though. The plane will just be being tossed around in the sky. I've been on flights where people were completely panicking. I was on a flight where a boy who was about 15 years old had a full-on anxiety attack, just completely lost it, and they had to, like, lay him down across three seats and put a blanket over him and try and keep him calm because he's freaking out. Every time there's a bump, someone will go, there'll be, like, a scream in the back of the plane. And I find myself with just amazing existential calm at that moment because I realize there is nothing I can do.
Well, yeah.
There is literally nothing I can do about this. Fear is pointless.
Even if I were to rush the cockpit, what am I going to do? All I know how to do is engage auto, and that's it. And that doesn't really help you.
Yeah, I just have this sort of one with the universe. It's almost nihilism, but not really. Just like, well, I may die.
And with me,
but you know, I got nothing.
And that's my thing. Is like I realize that there's nothing I can do, and then I just get that, you know, because one never really knows how one is going to meet one's end. And so you think, well, you know, are you just going to, you know, get, you know, are you just going to get whopped with the cancer stick later on? Or are you just going to get the, you know, you're going to be on the street and an anvil falls on you or something? Or just, you know, you're going to fall into some sort of a giant industrial food processing machine? One, you don't really ever know. But you got to figure that, especially if you're that high, you know, if you're just, you know, at 35,000 feet or whatever, that's going to be, that's the best way to die right there. I mean, really, all things, I mean, you know, unless you're just going to die surrounded by hookers or something in your, you know, in your sleep, you know, at Shea Sheen or something. I mean, it's like, you know, really, that's where you just, I think that's where you become zen because there's nothing you can do. And also you go like, well, this is it. The sweet calming hand of death has finally come for me. And, you know, and it'll be over.
Nothing else to worry about now.
Yeah, like, you know, credit card bills, F it, don't care. You know, place I got to be, somewhere I got to be tomorrow, you know, fight with the wife, dog's got worms, doesn't matter, who cares? So I'm always kind of, I know this sounds horrible, but I'm always sort of vaguely then disappointed when the turbulence ends and I'm not dead. And I think, well, maybe next time. Maybe next time. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. This is all true. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Plagues and or blesses your ears, depending on how you look at it, with a certain kind of ribe amusement. We've got, let's see, do we have a...
We have a penis watch and a clown watch.
Penis watch, clown watch. Got a penis watch coming up next hour, so clown watch coming up. Next hour, penis... Clown.
Penis clown.
That is all coming up next hour. Plus, I have You didn't go to this thing that I went to last night.
No.
There was this KUFO, you know. Sort of
I was not a KUFO employee, so therefore there would have been no point of me going to
People asked after you, as they say.
Oh, that's nice.
They said, "Where's that Dawn?" And I said, "Who?"
She didn't work here. She wasn't invited.
Dawn. Like anybody really wants to see her. Many people asked about you, and so I... I very nearly texted you last night, and I didn't, but I very nearly texted you, and that was after I very nearly sent you a picture message, which I also didn't do, but both of those were after I very nearly had Timmy Ryan call you on my phone, because he was there. He appeared like a specter, like an apparition, like a vision from the void. So, it was a strange evening. It was a really, really bizarre evening. So
I hear Marconi is even tinier than and more slender than he was before.
It's like half the man he used to be. It's astounding. It really is, to the point that, I mean, I've talked to that guy a couple of times since he kind of lost all of the lost all that weight, and it's but you know who hadn't seen him is Big Jim. Because, they worked together. I don't think there's any sort of story or whatever. Maybe there is. I don't know. But, they worked together and then they didn't work together because, the show got busted up because they moved people around or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
But they hadn't seen each other for like a year, year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And Jim was just, he was like goggle-eyed. He just could not. And it really is amazing, Jim, because you would never. I think if I did not know. If I didn't know definitively that was Marconi, I honestly don't think I would recognize him.
Yeah, Sarah said he was unrecognizable.
Yeah.
From the guy he was before.
And it's not like, you just sort of sit and you go, "Hey, is that you?" I honestly, literally don't think I could pick him out of a lineup. If they said, "And you know him from an earlier time in your life," I think I would just stare and go like, I got nothing. I have nothing at all. Someone just says in all caps, which is really the most appropriate way to talk about Timmy Ryan, "I effing love Timmy Ryan." So, all right. Well, there you go.
Sir. As we have established before, I have somehow managed to never meet Timmy Ryan.
Yeah.
And so it's this sort of event that is looming out there on the horizon. Someday it will happen.
It was just the strangest night. Anyway, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
Tossing a cigarette butt onto the ground could bring a smoker a $90 fine for littering under a law Oregon lawmakers are considering in Salem. It passed the Senate Judiciary Committee on Wednesday with a 3-2 vote. The Register Guard reports it would create a subset of the current littering law specifically for tobacco products. Senator Floyd Prezansky said it would give police a new enforcement tool. An opponent, Senator Jeff Cruz of Roseburg, doesn't see the merits of creating new penalties for different types of litter. So,
I'm sorry. Do we have sound on that?
Okay. No, that's the whole thing.
And is that here?
That's Oregon. That would be the entire state.
Not just Multnomah County. That's Oregon.
That would be the whole.
So this
state is
just throwing a cigarette.
Yeah, throwing tobacco.
Is it not illegal now?
I guess all littering is illegal, but there's
this
no
would be hella illegal
specific prohibition against cigarette butts.
Well, that's
stupid.
Why does there need to be?
That's what Senator Jeff Cruz of Roseburg seems to be saying.
Yeah,
why have new penalties for different types of littering?
Well, it just seems like it's already illegal. So, really, what is there to do unless they're going to make it, unless they are going to amplify the penalty under the theory that it is also a fire hazard, which I guess.
But again, if it's lit, I believe there are already laws about throwing burning things. Well, maybe that's just from your car.
I don't know. Well, but it seems like car schmar. If you're throwing it on the ground, you're throwing it on the ground.
Because I assume Oregon has much the same kind of laws that California does, because California has really, really high fines for
because every
for
year there's
throwing
some jackass who burns down half the wilderness.
So something like a $300 fine for throwing, as they say,
a combustible item.
Yeah, combustible items out of the out of your car.
You know, can I just tell you this? Speaking of combustible items and retards,
as we do.
Oh, my God. There was the best. This is not my joke, so I'm just I'm not this funny. I am not witty enough. Can I just say, there was the best Onion headline the other day, which I just reminded myself of. There's a little bit of bonus humor for you here in the middle of your news. You know, we're going to get back to the news in a second, but we're going to take just a moment, like the filling in an Oreo, and we're going to divide the two halves of this hour with this moment of levity. It's the best Onion headline, and it just said, "Gay retard mocked."
That is. Yeah.
It really is just a thing of sublime greatness.
That is.
But Anyway.
It's almost like a little haiku of humor.
Yeah. The, well, in any event, but when I was going through, when I was at flying out of JFK Airport, you know, and it's like they were actually really, I gotta say, the people at JFK, you know, you gotta figure of any place in the country, the people at JFK, they have, you know, if any TSA group or any sort of security organization is gonna be a little twitchy, you gotta figure it's people in New York City.
Yeah.
That they have every right just to go like, nah, just spread them, you know, because, you know, and what are you gonna say? You're gonna, you don't have any, you know, well, okay.
What are you so scared of?
Seriously, you know, well, what's the worst that could happen? You know, so, but they're actually, like, really, like, calm about the whole thing. But there's a sign that just doesn't, it's one of those things where I try not to let it get me bent out of shape, and I try not to sort of just be picking fights about stuff. But as you're getting on the airplane, that, or as you're going through security at JFK, there's a sign that just says, you may not bring explosive or, quote, flammable materials through security. And it's like, if I had not been, A, running late, and if I had not been so just desperate to get back to Portland, because being in New York is like being in Vegas. It's like living in dog years, where you're just so exhausted and you just want to leave. But the idea that I'm being prohibited from bringing explosives, and then they single out fireworks for some reason, but then they say explosives or flammable materials on the plane, which just means, like, everything.
Yeah.
Like, your pants are flammable.
Paper, your
hair is flammable.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where you just wish, that, like, the very least, if we could all just agree to use the language the way that it was sort of written, you know? Just maybe just use the words the way that the dictionary it tells you to use them. And, you know, we'll just call that a little common ground on which we can stand. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do some science.
Here's your science on the march for Thursday right here at Legion of News, part of Cascadia.fm's stellar lineup. That is brought to you by Squires Electric. This science on the march is Squires Electric. Can be found at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. Usually this is when I talk to you about wiring and wires and electricity and amperage and voltage and kilojoules and whatever. I'll just say that if you don't listen to the Rick Emerson Show, I mean, you're a sad, sad individual, really, who has only the release of death someday to improve your life. But even more so today, because you missed yesterday's conversation with Joe Squires of Squires Electric, who's on the Rick Emerson Show, and I swear to God, this sounds like a joke, but I swear to God, in the space of like 7 minutes, he described how nuclear power operates, and then what's going wrong in Japan, and how they're trying to fix it, and why it might not work.
He actually explained, like, nuclear rods and containment pools and cooling things and stuff, and it actually made sense.
Also, how bombs work,
right?
And stuff. And I had just, I mean, and if you told me going into that, I mean, obviously he's a guy who knows his stuff, but if you told me going into it that, like, in 5 minutes I was going to have some sort of a bluffable knowledge, a passing knowledge of how nuclear power actually functions, I'm not really sure that. I'm not really sure that I would have believed it, not because of him, but just because my brain is tiny and full of holes. But he actually made it work. So I really, honestly, I mean, whatever it is that's going wrong at your house, like you can't plug in the blender and, you know, and like the snow cone maker at the same time, like it really is just of such minuscule proportions compared to the nut. Like, that guy's got a brain like a planet, obviously.
Yeah, he's way overqualified to come and, like, you know, rewire your hot tub.
Yeah, so I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't really worry about it. I don't know. It's a pretty tricky situation I've got here. Just call Squires Electric. It's 503-252-1609. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
Up to 45 rare species of wallaby, bandicoot, and other Australian animals could become extinct within 20 years unless urgent action is taken to control introduced predators and other threats. Dozens of mammals, birds, lizards, and other vertebrates in the remote northwestern Kimberley region are at risk from hunting by feral cats and from destruction of their native habitat by wild donkeys, goats, and fires, according to scientists. Tara Martin, a co-author of the report that was funded by the government, said, "We're in the midst of a massive extinction event in Australia, and the north has been really the last stronghold for many species of birds and mammals and reptiles. Nearly 30% of the endangered species identified in the study are unique to the Kimberley region, while others, like the golden bandicoot and golden-backed tree rat, have already disappeared elsewhere in the country." The study says that the most effective ways of combating the threat of extinction are to reduce the number of wild donkeys and goats that compete with the native species for scarce food and water, and to do more to fight wildfires that scorch the region.
I wonder if I could have a spotted owl just sort of hanging out at my house. Like, if that's a thing you can get as a pet.
they're endangered, so you might not be allowed to keep one as a pet. But on the other hand, they think they want you to because
that's what I'm saying.
Because
I'd
safe.
I would keep it safe from predators.
Yeah.
You know, and also it would be awesome. Just because it's one of those things that you only ever really hear mentioned in terms of the endangered wildlife or the fight between industry and labor and nature and whatever. And it occurs to me that I don't know if they're still endangered. It's like the California condor. When I was growing up, it was like there was a whole thing about, like, the California condor. There's only three of them left in the world or something. And I don't know if that's true or not. That's one of those things that it goes into a certain category in our heads, but they never really tell you, like, it was like with the terror alert. They never really tell you when the all clear has happened. I mean, there could be 70 million California condors for all I know, but I will always think it's endangered because they never bother to tell you when the problem's fixed.
What are those raptor cams watch? You know, where we have the raptor cams here in Oregon, which watch the
like
nests.
Like velociraptor cams?
Well, they're just called raptors. Are they watching hawks or California condors or what are you have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
No.
Okay.
Instead, like now at Slack moments, whenever there's something you mention that I don't understand, I just get that it's that Jessica Black song just goes around in my head.
Okay. Would you, Rick Emerson, buy a tub of popcorn at the movies if you knew you'd be eating more than 1,400 calories?
Well, this is probably part of a larger conversation. Let's just say no so we can get to the...
Okay. Movie theaters believe that you probably wouldn't, which is why the National Association for Theater Owners is lobbying the FDA against introducing food labels at their concession stands. It boils down to a provision in the federal health care law that says restaurant chains with at least 20 U.S. locations must provide the calorie content of their menu items. Though it was initially intended for only restaurants, the law is about to include grocery stores and concession stands, a move that theater operators aren't happy about. In the wake of soaring national obesity rates, it's not surprising lawmakers are flirting.
The best part is that you just sort of rolled your eyes at that.
That's one of those things that people say, and they have no idea what they're actually talking about.
Here's how you know that it's true. Because if you ever sit on a plane, a bus, you go anywhere that was built before 1970, seats are real narrow. Everything's real tiny. Now, huge.
Well, we had that conversation just the other day where, in fact, the pants I'm wearing right now that I tried on jeans at Kmart and then bought the Kmart brand pants on my way out because they were the only ones that came in black, and I bought exactly the same size, and I got home and they're like two sizes too big. And you were saying that the small t-shirts at Walmart,
I can't buy. I wear this is like this right now is a small small shirt that I'm wearing, but it's not from Walmart, you know, even though they have low price consumer goods, because the small shirt at Walmart is like a tent on me. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, because they're doing vanity sizing for lower middle class Americans who apparently are fat bastards.
I'm not saying it's not overstated. I mean, everything sort of gets over, the danger of everything gets overstated. But I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we've become a more corpulent people.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, the movie theater industry argues that they are just concession stands, so why should they have to exhibit what's in their food? Gary Klein, general counsel for the National Association of Theater Owners, told the LA Times, "We're not restaurants where people go to eat and satisfy themselves. The average person goes to the theater four times a year. I don't think they care." This isn't the first time the theater industry has been put in the spotlight for selling fatty popcorn. The Center for Science and the Public Interest has been waging an awareness war on the evils of popcorn for some time. If logic prevails...
Well, popcorn isn't evil. It's butter that's evil.
No, it's the huge things of butter-flavored oil that they soak the popcorn
in. Yeah, I mean, it's just like fat and whatnot. Because, popcorn itself is, I don't know, probably neither good nor bad. It's just one of those things. It's like eating celery or something.
And
plywood.
And worrying about it is kind of stupid anyway, because according to the American Journal for Preventive Medicine, findings show that posting fat and salt contents for fast food chains has no effect on people's menu choices.
No, I mean, because then it just, all that does is just turn it into a competition between the five guys there to see who can eat the most calories in one sitting without vomiting, and then they wager like a pitcher of beer on it or something.
Oh, yeah, the Super Carl Jr. Star Mac Extreme has 3,500 calories.
The old 76er. I can eat the entire thing. So, really the key is just to not have movie theater popcorn, not because it's not bad for you, but because it's terrible.
Yeah.
Because it's awful. I mean, and, that's that thing where I'm not like a health nut, or anything. It's like I really live just a terribly unhealthy lifestyle, I suppose, by some metrics. Supposed to, let's say, your average Aboriginal. But on the other hand, you know, what I don't eat is like movie theater popcorn anymore. A, because it's, you know, because it's obviously not good for you, and also because it's expensive. And lastly, because you get about 3 bites into it, and you get that film on the inside of your mouth, and you go, well, this is vile. Why am I eating this? And then it's, but you would just forget about it, and then the next time you go, you order more, and you go, well, wait a minute, this is vile. And so I was just like a dog whizzing on an electric fence for years with that, where I would just do it over and over again. And finally, I just said, well, you know, maybe I should stop ordering this because it's terrible and expensive.
I don't eat it because, yeah, it's terrible and it's expensive. Also, I don't. You may have noticed I have this weird issue with my hands being greasy. I don't like having dirty hands.
Oh.
I don't like feeling that
dirty
my hands are
hands.
Greasy. And so then I'm in the theater and I usually have inadequate napkins for my needs, so I end up with popcorn grease on my pants, and it's just horrible.
Well, and also you always order. If you're like me, you always order more than you're going to need, which means then you get to the end of the movie or the whatever, you just become full, or you just go like, oh, I'm going to vomit. And you got like a third of a bucket of popcorn, and there's nothing you can do with that. Because if you take it home, it's not like you can put it in the toaster oven and make it all wonderful again. I mean, there's nothing you can do with that.
And except, no one wants it. You're not going to give it to someone else. Would you like some leftover popcorn?
It's like some
no
stale popcorn from Regal that I got last night. Ooh, it's really good. I mean, not even the pigeons want that, you know, and so then it just becomes, and so then it's just like a third of a thing that you've already paid like 10,000% markup for, you know, and you just feel like, you will never feel like more of a mark than when you get to the end of your snack that you purchased at the theater and realize that you've just been horked like nobody's business. I mean, that's just a financial, that's a straight mugging they give you at the theater for that, so.
More than 100,000 people have signed an online petition calling for Apple to remove an app from the iTunes store that was created by an anti-gay Christian organization. Exodus International, which, according to its website, has ministries that provide support for individuals who want to recover from homosexuality, released the app on February 15th. The app has a 4+ approval rating from the Apple App Store, and the organization is quick to point out that this rating is reserved for those apps that contain no objectionable material. Gay rights activists, however, disagree. No objectionable content? We beg to differ, reads the Change.org petition that was started by the nonprofit advocacy organization Truth Wins Out. Exodus's message is hateful and bigoted. They claim to offer freedom from homosexuality through the power of Jesus Christ and use scare tactics, misinformation, stereotypes, and distortion of LGBT life to recruit clients. The app is like a portable version of Exodus International's website. It has a calendar of events, news, links to their social media sites, and videos. Those items, like corresponding features of its website, reflect its anti-gay message, in particular, its belief that someone can be counseled away from homosexuality. In the blog post, the organization writes that it intends to broaden its reach with the app. Despite the petition calling for their removal, which suggests Exodus International is dangerously broadening its reach towards youth, and a storm of negative complaints posted on the app's download page, Apple has not taken the Exodus International app iTunes link down.
I guess maybe operating out of the proposition that people aren't going to accident. It's not like you're going to trip and fall toward your computer and inadvertently buy it. You know? I mean, it seems like if that's a thing that ends up on your phone, that's because, I mean, it's not like getting the app is a one-step process. I mean, you got to sort of, you know, that's a thing you got to go out of your way to get. So it doesn't really seem like it's in danger of ending up like on your phone and then inadvertently brainwashing you by the end of the day.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, that Apple does ostensibly have a philosophy about not allowing any apps that are objectionable, that are offensive. And so, you know, I think that they will nix anything that's racially, you know, offensive.
I'm sure the people in China who are assembling the iPhones appreciate Apple's sensitivity to racial relations.
I know.
I no disagreement with from me. I mean, bigoted pinheads are bigoted pinheads, but the same token, it's like you would like to think that one of the benefits of being whatever you want to call it, liberal or progressive or whatever, you'd want to, like, here's my thing, like, I just don't care. I mean, like, I just, you know, I'm not going to give like 1 second extra of my life to some idiot in a bedsheet somewhere who's stomping around, hating gays or blacks or anybody else who doesn't look and act exactly like he does. That's sort of that's the advantage of not, of being an adult, is I can go, oh, there's an idiot who's attempting to monopolize some of my precious brain power in my short life. I think I'll ignore him. As opposed to wait, and on an online petition, I mean, really. I mean, you might as well just go out and lecture the squirrels in your backyard about it.
My personal view is that I think I give a hearty thumbs up to those people who like actually started the petition and signed the petition and sent it off to Apple and actually, I support them in every single, it's like, yes, tell them you're offended by this and it is stupid. And yes. Tell Apple that you are offended by stupid pinheads. But of course, like you, it's like I'm also extremely lazy and don't really care that deeply to the point where I didn't sign the petition.
It just seems like the app.
Mostly, I'm just on the sidelines going, you go there, people.
It just seems like Rock. That app. The app is not anything. It's not like it comes preloaded on the phone and therefore is in danger of swaying somebody's opinion.
No.
Like that is a thing you arrive at because you already think that. At which point, if you're really going to go out of your way to go to the Apple store and get a thing on your phone so you can go around de-gaying people. Well, first of all, I want you to have that app because I want to be able to spot you in a crowd so I can avoid you at all costs. Like, that's my thing. Whenever there's just something like, overtly horrible or racist or whatever, and they're trying to get rid of it or to take it off the market, or it's like, when they, like, somebody will agitate about wanting to make it illegal to fly, the Confederate flag or the whatever. I am for having, or that guy that had the, what is it, the guy that, was it for Halloween where he had, or was it for Christmas where he had like a Klan snowman or something? Or
yeah.
Was it at Halloween where he had like a Klan costume? Or possibly both, because it was the South, so who knows?
Yeah.
But, and they wanted to make it illegal to put up like a Halloween decoration that was overtly racist or that was, And the thing is, I'm so opposed to all of those laws because I want to identify those people just so I can steer clear of that house, like, forever. But, anyway. And... I don't know. Just be a bigot. Just, I really just don't care. It's like that is the way that I sort of deal with bigotry for the most part is I just don't think about it, don't care about it, and don't give them any influence over my life at all.
Of course, you are a white American male, so you kind of, you're kind of.
What are you saying, Don?
You're kind of in a good position to ignore bigotry if you like.
No, that's not true, Don, because a slight to one is a slight to all, and an offense to one group is an offense to the world entire.
Are you
saying that I am not part of the human tapestry?
I'm just saying.
Are you saying I'm not part of the circle of life?
I'm just saying, as a straight white American male, maybe you got less to worry about than some other people.
No, here's why that's not true. See, that's a thing that people say, and it sounds accurate on the surface if you don't actually think about it or examine it in any way. But if you put a gay guy in the room and me in the room right here, the Apple application to de-gay people affects us both the same amount, which is not at all. There is no way, no quantifiable way on earth at all in any realm where a guy sitting in this room who's gay and me are affected by that Apple app.
But the
at all.
The gay person is far more likely to be offended by it than you are.
I don't know that that's true. They're gay Republicans. So, there are the so-called log cabin Republicans who are not only gay, but who actively support a party whose platform consists of a ban on gay marriage.
Well, I'm not saying the gay person will definitely be offended by it, but I'm just saying they are far more likely to be offended by it than you are, because it's about them.
Well, okay, but being offended by it doesn't mean that it harms you.
No, that's true.
So that's what I'm saying. So the idea that... I guess I'm saying you're just giving them, whoever it is that makes the anti-gay app, like, way more power than they really deserve.
Well, it can also be argued that it contributes to a culture of intolerance.
I don't know that that's true, and I'll tell you another reason why I don't think that's true. Because living in Spokane, Washington, where every now and again you would get these five morons from the Aryan Nations that would do a parade through the middle of Boise, Idaho, if you ever wanted, or like you'd just go through like a Coeur d'Alene, and it would be, we're going to have a march on Saturday to demonstrate the rising power of the white nation and whatever, and it would always just be like five guys, and like a kid with no teeth just sort of walking down the street, and you just hear banjo music strumming away in your head. And there was nothing you could do to undermine the power of that group more than to demonstrate exactly how minuscule and how idiotic they are. And so the public disclosure of and display of their beliefs and their attitudes, that's the best possible weapon you ever could have had against any sort of a growth or power on behalf of that organization. Because if you don't ever see them, if you don't know who they are, if you don't ever actually witness them or be exposed to them, it's easy to think that it's a massive section of society, or that they're really smart, or that they're fearsome, or that they're something to be afraid of, or that they have some undue influence or sway over the rest of the country. But I mean, you just got to see three guys in a grubby bedsheet walking down the street and you go, I guess they're just idiots. That's awesome. I mean, so it is with the Westboro Baptist. Look, put it this way. If the Westboro Baptist Church never showed up to protest anywhere and you just sort of heard about them in the news, you might think they were a fearsome organization with 10,000 members.
And I think a lot of people do think that because they get so much press.
They have not contributed to an air of intolerance because every time they go to protest, it makes it more and more apparent to everybody that they're just a handful of clowns. So I think that sunlight is the best disinfectant for all things. So I am all for putting everybody's cards on the table so you can look over and you can go, oh, so that's what people who believe that are like. Oh, we can just ignore them. They're retards. So I am, have at it. Doesn't matter to me.
Well, that's all our science.
All right, there you go. Let's see, there's your science on the march for, what is today, Thursday?
Thursday.
For Thursday, March 24th, 2011. That is March 24th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric, squireselectric.com, or 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609 whatnot. Here's Don Taylor.
Portland police are looking for a driver of a car that hit a utility pole in southeast Portland and knocked out power to more than 100 people. A smart utility vehicle hit the pole at the intersection of southeast 134th. Oh, we don't need science music anymore.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to minimize this, but there's a thing.
Oh, okay.
Wait. There we go. Okay. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
So a guy hit a utility pole at southeast 134th Avenue in Holgate at 1:10 a.m., after its impact with the pole, the vehicle ran over a fence and came to rest in a yard. Residents in the area reported hearing the impact. The driver left the vehicle
behind.
Is that
Holgate and what?
Southeast 134th.
Okay.
The driver left the vehicle behind and left the scene. Police have no details about the driver, but the vehicle is a 1983 Ford Bronco.
I love stories where the guy just leaves the vehicle behind. Because there's really only a few reasons why you've done that. A, the vehicle isn't really yours to be taking or leaving. You are wanted for something else, which presents a large enough prison sentence that you decide it's really just you're going to cut your losses. It's a bit of a loss leader just to sort of have the vehicle left behind at the scene while you skedaddle off into the weeds on foot or other.
That happened to my husband one day at work, actually, because he drives around all day for work. And he was at, I think it was like 32nd and Division. And some guy rear-ended him at a stoplight. And so Patrick put the car in park and opened the door to get out of the car to, like, deal with the guy. And the guy just opened the door to it was like a little truck, jumped out of the car and just ran away.
Awesome.
Just, like, took off at full speed, like across four lanes of traffic and then, like, around the corner and disappeared from sight.
That's fantastic. And because then you just wonder, like, well, because then your mind just creates an entire backstory. You spend the rest of the afternoon just wondering exactly what is up with that guy. And you can create an infinite number of scenarios that might have led to that moment. So, you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Penis Watch and Clown Watch coming up, among a myriad other delights and fantabulous things. Boy, my noun usage really failed me there at the end.
Yeah.
You can find out more at RickEmersonShow.com, or you can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And it's 32 cents a day. A cost for which you can get almost nothing. I'm trying to think of... I think we determined that now phone calls are 50 cents. You know what's 50 cents? The goddamn thing at the Arco station where you just put air into your... air!
It's 50 cents now?
Effing air is 50 cents. So, I mean, really, your air, your water, all of that costs substantially more than what you are expected to pay for hours of bemusement and entertainment.
I paid $2.50 for this Vizo.
And I'm saying, you drink a Vizo and then it gives you an up for, 90 minutes, 2 hours, if that. That's the boost that it gives you. I mean, it's substantial, but it's temporary. Whereas, the Rick Emerson Show, that improves your life in a permanent, ongoing way.
It's the cost of 3 Vizos.
That's what I'm saying.
Month.
And it really, it provides a boost to your daily existence that cannot even be quantified. I mean, it's so massive.
Well, employees of a Cleveland business owner believe his cell phone saved his life after he was shot during a robbery on Tuesday. Cleveland police said a gunman walked into John's Used Auto Parts on Meech Street in Cleveland, announced a holdup, and then shot the owner, 69-year-old John McCurley, in the chest and abdomen. Investigators said when a customer, 47-year-old Doug Jones, walked into the store, the robber shot him and then ran out the door. An employee was alerted by a coworker that Mr. McCurley needed help. He came running across and said, "The boss just got shot, so I ran across the street," he said. "There's a guy sitting on the stairs holding his belly. He just took a bullet to the belly. And I go in, my boss is laying in the hallway, just got two bullets in him." They tried to stabilize him and before the paramedics arrived and realized that McCurley would have taken a bullet to the heart as well if not for his cell phone, which was in his pocket, and it had a bullet right in the middle of the cell phone.
Strangely enough, this lacks the poetic grandeur of having it blocked by a Bible or a pocket watch or something.
No. John McCurley, by the way, his cell phone may be getting the credit for saving his life.
Do we have the brand of cell phone? Because that's a marketing campaign just waiting to be done.
No, they really should have. They should get in there.
That's some promotional material in the offing.
But one of his friends, Jeff Simmons, says, the guy who shot him, has to be sick. You couldn't put any other day. Sick, on dope, or just plain crazy.
On dope.
Yes. And he said, while the cell phone may have stopped the bullet, Simmons believes a higher power was watching over his friend.
Okay.
Although he still took like a couple of other bullets to like other parts of his body. So apparently the higher power was only watching so much.
Maybe the higher power has to choose. Maybe it's like missile command where eventually you just have to pick one base to defend and let the others just go. You just got to go, look, I'm going to pick this thing on the alpha base over here on the left. The other two, I'm sorry, Godspeed to you. All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Nearly 5 million box fans are being recalled by a Pennsylvania company.
I love boxes. I can't get enough of boxes. Woo! Box!
Box, box, box.
Is this box fans?
Box fans. You know,
oh, the fan. The air blowing
things.
Yeah,
it's okay. A square fan.
Here's what happened in my head. When you said box fans, I thought there was like a band or like a musical group called Box. But then after that, I thought it was sort of like Johann Sebastian Bach. Or perhaps P.D. Kubach.
I was just thinking of big brown cardboard boxes, which I love, by the way. So, I count myself a fan of the box. Patty Davis of the Consumer Product Safety Commission explains why this happened.
Let's see. This is fans.
An electrical failure in the fan's motor can pose a fire hazard to consumers.
Because I'm an idiot. Because I don't know what powers a fan. That's the implication right here. Listen to the tone of voice. For those of you who are perhaps enfeebled in some way, or were shoeing a horse and sustained some sort of injury and are not able to process my words fully, I'll speak slowly.
An electrical failure in the fan's motor can pose a fire hazard.
The motor or doohickey? Does it seem like electrical isn't really a word?
No.
Why don't you just say electric? Why do you need to put the AL at the end of it? I'm not agitated. I'm just curious.
I don't know.
It just seems like that's redundant.
Well, Davis, as she mentioned earlier, says that an electrical failure in the motor can pose a fire hazard.
There have been 7 reports of fires associated with these LASCO fans, including 2 houses.
Is she putting verbal quotes around the word fan?
There have been 7 reports of fires associated with these LASCO fans, including 2 house fires and 1 barn fire, and extensive property damage.
She has a very pleasing voice. I would like for her to whisper to me from a book of 1,000-year-old erotic poems. So just get on
just
that, Don.
Just an odd way of emphasizing certain words.
I want to hear this like you never know what to get Rick for Christmas or my birthday or whatever. I'm now telling you, this is...
Just get a hold of...
Exactly.
Who is she? Patty Davis of the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
And then I can also imagine that she's Reagan's slutty daughter.
Yeah. Let's do our entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday right here at Legion of News.
Howard Stern and his agent filed a lawsuit against Sirius XM Radio this week, Stern's employer for the next 5 years, claiming it owes them stock awards for helping to grow its subscribers.
What would possibly be the benefit of them giving you any of those stock alleged awards?
According to the Associated Press, Stern's production company, 112 Incorporated, and his agent, Don Buchwald, say Sirius awarded them a bonus after Stern started with the company in January 2006, but failed to do so the next 4 years when its growth targets were also exceeded. Sirius has issued the following statement. Sirius XM just signed a contract through 2015 with Howard Stern, and he is a valued part of our company. We are thus surprised and disappointed by the subsequent legal action initiated by his production company and agent. We have met all our obligations under the terms of our 2004 agreement with Howard, his agent, and his production company.
Wait a minute. Now is the bonus? I'm unclear about this. So is it the bonus that he was supposed to get for, in other words, He said, I'll join up, and if I join up and your membership increases to the following levels the following years, because they don't, you know. I will also
stock.
Get a bonus of whatever. Okay, yeah. But that was my question. Is the bonus in stock or is the bonus in cash?
No, I believe it's in stock. Because they're saying there's stock
awards. You want to talk about a Pyrrhic victory. I don't really know that they have money to give. I mean, I think it's just, you know, talk about a pig in a poke. That just seems, there's got to be something else that sort of, something else must be happening behind the scenes, or he must be angling for something in addition to all of that. Because the amount of time and money that it would cost to get stock options, which are going to be, I think, de facto worthless, especially compared to whatever it is it's going to cost you to get them, especially if it goes all the way to some sort of arbitration or some mediation or something, just seems like seems like you're stepping over dollars to get the pennies there.
I guess. You know, I mean, again, he has an agent. He has financial advisors. He has people who work for him. And their whole job is to, like, keep track of, like, what they're contractually owed. So, you know, makes sense that, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, Howard, Sirius should have given us stock for the last couple of years. And he goes, okay, why don't you ask him about that?
I wonder if that's one of those things where they realize the stock itself is not going to be, I mean, that there's no point in fighting for the stock, but if they can drag them into enough litigation and just sort of ensnare them in something that is both costly and time-consuming, that they can then effectively trade that in. They go, well, okay, I mean, we'll just take 30% of that, but in cash by the end of the day.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I would do.
Zach Galifianakis has signed a first-look development deal with HBO. One of the projects under this deal is a series headlined by comedian Brody Stevens, which looks at the ups and downs of being a comic. That wasn't really all that interesting. Actress Emily Mead, who played Michael Pitt's doomed prostitute lover on Boardwalk Empire, has signed on to Fringe as an FBI agent. Her character will show up on the Fox show's May 6th season finale.
Back on what was the first story? Is this a documentary?
Zach Galifianakis? I think it's a series. I think he's developing and producing a series for some buddy of his.
Is it a reality show?
No, I don't think so. It's probably fiction.
It's just a chuckle fest?
Comedian playing a comedian.
I mean, the show named after himself.
It's going to be about the wacky adventures that somebody has as a comedian when you're like a comedian.
Why don't they just bring back, you know, instead of doing this, now I sound like an old guy, but really, instead of just developing these new programs, why don't they just bring back Titus? That'd make me happy.
Speaking of Boardwalk Empire, Paz de la Huerta, cast member of the series Boardwalk Empire, was arrested after allegedly fighting with the city reality show star Samantha Suerta, according to TMZ. De la Huerta reportedly arrived at a New York bar on Saturday and started flirting with a male friend of Suerta's. When Suerta insulted De la Huerta, the actress reportedly attacked her. And she filed a police report on Wednesday.
Your whiteness is never more evident than when you were presented with a story that has many, many Latin names with which you must pronounce. You don't really have. Here's the thing, and not that I do. You lack the subtle the lilt in your voice to really. You can't convey it saucily enough.
No, I can't. And I always have that battle of like how hard should I try to pronounce it correctly, because you know. I grew up in Los Angeles, so you'd have these news reporters who were Hispanic who had done everything they could to, like, remove every trace of accent, but they felt compelled to pronounce everything Spanish correctly. So they would say, you know, and then this afternoon in Guadalajara. Yeah, and it always sounded just awkward
it's called
and stupid.
Pulling a Trebek.
Yes.
The answer was Tijuana.
Yeah. Actress-singer Gwen Stefani donated $1 million yesterday to Save the Children's Japan Earthquake Tsunami Children in Emergency Fund. Wow, that's a mouthful, isn't it? Save the Children's Japan Earthquake Tsunami Children in Emergency Fund.
Does it at least form an interesting acronym?
SCGTEF.
No. Okay.
SCGTEF. No.
Is this the same thing? I'm trying to be flip about this. But there's like 500 different things going. There's all these different fundraisers for the, you know, for Japan. Yeah. And there's like a Portland Cares or Here Oregon Shout for Japan. Or
yeah, there's some kind of a concert that's
Japan.
With like Storm Large and a bunch of people. And then we also got an email the other day that Mercy Corps is doing something here in Portland, which
but this is not
I was going to mention.
This is something else altogether.
But yeah, this is entirely something, Anyway, so she said, I've been inspired by Japan for many years and have a true love, appreciation, and respect for the Japanese people and their culture. If you recall, last year she she started basing a lot of her stuff on like crazy Japanese street kid fashions and things like that.
That should be the name of the benefit.
Harajuku stuff.
Crazy Japanese street stuff.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Harajuku is. The disaster in Japan is beyond heartbreaking, she said, and I want to do anything I can to help. I would never be able to make a gesture like this without the love and support of all the fans over these years. She's also going to have, in addition to donating $1 million, limited edition Harajuku Lovers t-shirts designed by Stefani will be on sale at her website, www.no.com, nodoubt.com, with the proceeds going to Japan.
There should be a food court called Japan Cakes.
Yeah, well, they would just be little flat rice things with stuff in them.
Yes, okay. Just go out on that. There you go. There's Legion of News for Thursday, March 24th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. You can also get it on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow, that is Friday at noon, for Legion of News.